We are listening to the Nora Bays Foxtrot. It's the very first thing that comes up when you search 1917 in YouTube. 1917 and ragtime specifically.
Mm-hmm.
It was a big ragtime era.
Was it?
I think so.
You're guessing.
I sounded confident when I said it.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're undercutting me.
Okay.
I don't know what ragtime is. I know it's piano music.
You know,
and I know it's kind of jazzy.
I saw the musical Ragtime, and if I'm not mistaken, some of it might take place in 1917.
I haven't seen Billy Bathgate, and I get that and Ragtime mixed up.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen Billy Bathgate?
No.
Okay. So neither one of us are authorities on Billy Bathgate.
Or anything.
Think about how crazy it would be if we decided every week to have a podcast about Billy Bathgate.
I kind of don't know what that is.
You don't know what Billy Bathgate is?
I remember seeing the book around my house when I was a kid.
Okay, yeah, it was a book, and then there was a movie with Dustin Hoffman, and I think it took place around the ragtime era.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the extent of what I know. Anyways, that's myself, Jeff Ryan, and Vinny Nardiello. We are going to be doing a weekly podcast for you, the reader. Shoot. For you, the listener, about 1917. Everything 1917, because that is 100 years ago today.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll start off every episode. Yes. I had to mentally check myself to see if I said episode or issue.
Episode.
Okay. Well, comic books have issues, TV shows have episodes, podcasts have episodes, mm-hmm. but the words aren't interchangeable. Anyways, we're going to start off each episode, I said it right the second time in a row, with a classic song from 1917. By classic, I mean a song I may never have heard of before, but maybe someone else will appreciate
There's probably someone who's an authority on ragtime now, who's punching his computer. You know, because this may have been the Taylor Swift of the day. Like this,
yes, exactly.
This might be the commercial garbage that guy hates.
This is a song that's played on the Philco so many times, like, oh, turn that off. The top 10 songs, all the Nora Bays Foxtrot. I feel like we should be foxtrotting now.
It's late, what's it?
I actually learned the foxtrot for my wedding.
Really?
Yes.
I was at your wedding, I don't remember this.
Well, it turns out we didn't remember it either, because there was a lot of stuff going on our wedding day, and as we were descending the stairs of the place we rented, we had our rehearsed number, and we were going to do our special foxtrot, and we both realized neither one of us remembered anything about the routine. So
you didn't learn to foxtrot?
Well, technically, I did learn a foxtrot. I just wasn't able to perform the foxtrot.
Did you do it at home later on?
No. What we did, which was a great bonding moment, it was one of the best moments of the wedding, and no one knew it, was that we agreed that I would just whisper the dance moves to her. And as every time we got close, I'd say, okay, now we're going to do the three-step or the four-step. I don't even remember what the steps were anymore. But that's what we did. And I started small, and I built more and more steps. And by the end, we had like a dip or a twirl or something. And it drew a round of applause from a very hostile crowd at our wedding.
Really?
Yes.
A hostile crowd?
Yes. If you can get applause at your own wedding, you can get applause anywhere.
The one thing I remember about your wedding, and we're already getting off subject matter here, I do remember I almost killed your wife's grandmother.
You almost killed my wife's grandmother?
Yeah. Do you remember this happening?
No, because I'm not my wife's grandmother.
No. All right. Well, you were there, though. You were at the wedding.
I had other stuff going on.
I was charged with manslaughter. No, I was charged with bringing her into the church, and she was holding onto my arm, and apparently I was moving too fast for the old gal, and she slipped and fell.
Wait, like a complete fall, or did you help her?
I was probably a little slow to pick her up, and she was like, she started yelling like, you're moving too fast, you're walking too fast, and immediately I was like in denial. I'm like, no way, no, I'm arguing with this old woman in the church. Now, you know, I was entrusted with making sure she made her seat safely, and I failed after two steps.
Wow.
Is she alive still?
Yes, she is still alive.
I wonder if she remembers
this. She's doing great. And if she was born in 1917, it would have been perfect. Unfortunately, she's not as old as that. Ah. She was not born in 1917.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, the song is over. So ahoy hoy and welcome to 100 Years Ago Today, the 1917 podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Ryan. Joining me, as always, is Vinny Nardiello.
Hello, Jeff.
We have been friends for a long time, since college, over 20 years. We were former roommates. You were at my wedding. I was invited to your wedding, so we both have a wedding attending of the other one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank you for not letting me rent a tux. That was much appreciated.
No, I didn't do that to anybody, actually. Or myself. I didn't do it to myself.
So we decided that since this is the year 2017, we wanted to explore what it was like exactly 100 years ago. We also decided that we were in no way experts about the year 1917. We know very little, if anything, about 1917 going into this.
We're not historians.
No, we're not.
We're not researchers.
We weren't even history majors in college.
No, we took like whatever the most basic history class that was required of you.
Yes. I'm trying to remember what my basic history class was. It may have been a literature course on the British Empire, but it was just like reading Jane Austen books.
Israel was involved in my course, but I don't remember anything beyond that.
So here is what I know about 1917. This is like the extent, the full extent of it. And this is only the first week. So by the 52nd week, I'll have a lot more to say. But the first week, I think the Russia stuff was in 1917.
Yes. Maybe.
Okay. Now, would that be a firm yes or a firm maybe?
It sounds familiar.
If there was a Vegas odds maker and wanted a $100 bill from you and he'd give you $200 back if it was 1917 and would keep the $100 if it was not 1917, would you give him that $100 bill?
Yeah, I think, you know, because whatever reason, the 1917 sticks out in my head as a date of some importance.
Okay. Now, this is a terrible admission on my part, but I'm Irish, and 1917 sticks out in my mind also. I don't know if that's when the post office uprising was. There was a famous post office uprising, Michael Connelly, all that. I don't know what year it was. I think it was the 19-teens sometime.
World War One was going on.
Yes, World War One is going on. We're both confident in that.
The biggest star of the day, Houdini.
Houdini. Okay. Yes.
I don't know really.
We do believe he was still alive at this point. Vinny and I had a famous earlier argument about how Houdini died. I had a very long, elaborate, and turns out wrong story about a tank of water that he was accidentally locked in. And Vinny told me that he was sucker punched by a Canadian. I was like, no, that can't be right. He did not die from being sucker punched by a Canadian.
No, totally true.
It was true. I was in the wrong.
Not even like a professional boxing Canadian. It wasn't like Lennox Lewis or anything.
You know, I have a theory that all of the Canadian politeness that's like part of the Canadian national character is just a national apology for killing Houdini.
Yes, what those hoosers did to Houdini.
That may be the only Canadian death in the world. Like, what has Canada done? They killed Houdini. That's it.
They're shame. They're national shame. We have slavery. They killed Houdini.
Okay, here's one more thing I know about 1917, and I stumbled into this. I wasn't Googling it. I wasn't looking for it. 1917 was the year that the moon pie was invented.
Okay.
Okay, so we are in the 100th year anniversary, the centennial of the moon pie.
Are you a moon pie fan?
Not really. No, I find them dry.
Me too. Yeah. I don't really like them. Okay. I know I've had them.
Having said that, I'm going to contact the moon pie conglomerate and see if we can get some moon pies.
Is there a difference between moon pie and scooter pie?
Oh, I think moon pie and scooter pie may be like Coke and Pepsi, mm-hmm. where if you ask the moon pie people, they'll just have terrible things to say about scooter pies.
Tell me about these scooter pies. Well, they're great if you like eating piss.
Anyways, look forward later in the season to a whole episode just about moon pies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, here's a question for you. In 1917, who is the president of the United States?
Oh, God. Is it Wilson?
Yes. Yes,
really?
It is.
Really?
Yes.
I'm shocked I got that right.
Thomas Woodrow Wilson.
Really?
And I had to include the Thomas because it's a little bit of trivia that there's two presidents whose first name is Thomas,
mm-hmm.
and you ask who both of them are. And, of course, everyone gets Thomas Jefferson, but no one gets the other one.
Mm-hmm.
Thomas Woodrow Wilson. Woodrow's his middle name.
Really?
Yes.
I never got the whole use of middle name thing. I always feel like you're hiding something.
Well, I think it got popularized with all the assassins. So now when you hear someone with three names, you assume either Southerner or assassin.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, who was Prime Minister of England right during the time?
Oh, let's see. I seem to recall this on Downton Abbey. I watched Downton Abbey, and it was 1917. They met the Prime Minister.
Yep.
But I don't remember who it was.
It's another guy with three names, so he's possibly a Southerner, possibly an assassin.
Or possibly a Prime Minister.
Yes, David Lloyd George.
Okay, that's okay. Not who I remember from the from Downton Abbey.
And the King of England, and I'm not even going to ask you because you don't know, is George V. I didn't know either. I also don't know who George V is.
Mm-hmm.
Presumably he's related to Georges 1 through 4.
And he's not the one who stutters.
No, I think that was George VI, but then his name was Albert, and they called him Bertie, which is very confusing because, you know, Bert, I think, is like Bertram or Robert. There's really no, if you're a Bert, there's no name that's acceptable. You can't be a Robert, you can't be an Albert, you can't be a Bertram. None of them is good.
Mm-hmm.
I think Bert is just like one of the worst names to have for a man.
I don't think, I think because of Bert and Ernie, there are no longer any more Berts. Like, you know, like, it was a very, like, manly name in days of, like, your Burt Lancaster and that heartthrob Burt Young, Burt Convy. But I think now when we think Burt, we think the Muppet Burt.
Yes,
and,
yes.
Like, people don't, you know, there's no longer anybody named Burt, no longer anybody named Grover.
If your name was Robert, would you go by Burt?
No.
You have so many other choices.
Yeah.
You have Rob, you have Robbie, you have Bob. You could just go by Robert.
Yeah, so I think there's no more Elmos. Nobody's going to mean Elmo anymore. That's if your true. Name, once your name becomes popular in kids' TV, it's a dead name.
It's a dead name.
Yeah.
Week one of the 1970 podcast is brought to you by Wilkinson's Sarsaparilla, a worldwide reputation for over 75 years. Wilkinson's Sarsaparilla, essence of fluid extract of Red Jamaica. Wilkinson's Sarsaparilla, pronounced by the highest medical authorities, the most wonderful purifier of the human blood, the safest, most reliable remedy for torpid liver, debility, eruptions, etc. Wilkinson's Sarsaparilla, indispensable to all who value health. Wilkinson's Sarsaparilla, beware of imitations and substitutes. Wilkinson's Sarsaparilla, available at Watson & Company, Hong Kong Dispensary, and Queens Dispensary.
Mmm, that's some good sarsaparilla.
So now that we have our
weekly sponsor
out of the way.
No, go back. What are the things that it cures sarsaparilla?
It cures torpid liver.
All right, what do you think that means exactly?
Your liver is a little torpid.
I mean, I know what torpid means. I know what liver is, but I'm not, like, what, I'm trying to figure out what the liver does when it is torpid.
It has an agoo.
Yeah.
I've never said that word out loud. I don't know if that's the right pronunciation. Debility, which is, it's not really a specific ailment.
Yeah.
You could stub your toe and have a debility.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think drinking root beer is going to fix it.
Okay.
Sarsaparilla is basically like birch beer.
Okay.
And eruptions.
I'm thinking that's gas. Like,
see,
what else could it be?
I was thinking that was acne.
It was what?
Acne.
Acne, huh?
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't think it would be like heartburn or like, you know, or burping because
right.
of, like, I think that would actually make it worse.
Right. No one is prescribing root beer if you have too much burping.
Yeah. Yeah, like, that's not the cure for GERD. But, I'm thinking gas would be your
right.
Because like back then, like, you know, you wouldn't use a term as impolite as fart.
No.
So you had to say eruptions. Fart was the F word of 1917.
You know, I read a book about Charles Darwin, and it explained that he was stuck in his house for like the last 25 years of his life, and he couldn't he couldn't celebrate the fact that he was the greatest thinker of his day because of what was called odoriferous wind. Which is a fancy way of saying he couldn't get in a carriage and be taken 20 miles to London because he would stink up the place.
So he's stuck in his house. What do you think his house was like?
He was stuck with his adult kids who were just taking care of him.
Oh, my God. I have to imagine, like, you know, that, like, as kids are like, we know you're the greatest mind today, but at the same time, this is too much for us. You know, we
can't. I find it very ironic that the man who may be, you know, the person who gave us survival of the fittest seemed to be such like an imperfect human being himself.
Yeah, like this is what we evolved into.
Yeah.
A man with odoriferous, was it?
Odoriferous wind.
Odoriferous wind.
We're moving on to the items of the week. January 1st.
Happy New Year.
Oh, thank you. Happy New Year. It's the Rose Bowl, as always. The third annual Rose Bowl was played on January 1st, which means, according to math, the first Rose Bowl was in 1915. According to the 1917 Rose Bowl, Oregon beat Penn State 14-0. This is where I mentioned that I do not really know much or care about sports.
Mm-hmm.
You do, though.
I'm a sports fan.
You're a sports fan.
Not college football, though.
No? Did you watch any bowl games this year?
No. Not on purpose. Like, if you want to come, I'm in a room where other people are watching them.
Okay. Yeah, I never got into it just because I never went to a school where people cared about football.
Mm-hmm. No, I just, college football never, it always looks to me like bad football, like NFL, but kind of bad. You know, it's like watching like World League or something like that, or Arena Bowl.
Maybe that's just your negative viewpoint. What if you had a more optimistic viewpoint where you reset your level to high school football, and then when you watch college football, it looked like, oh wow, this is leagues better. And then when you watch the NFL, it's like, well, this is a huge step up from the NCAA.
Well, I mean, I know at the time though, like NCAA football was the football.
Yeah.
It was much bigger than pro football.
Right.
At the time. I always picture back then, it was just like, you know, like you didn't have to be that big or that good. It was just, because it was kind of like a new thing, football.
Yeah.
You know, just, you know, the leather helmet. Like, you know, probably have like most of the linemen were about 5'9", 180. 5'9", 180. He's, you know, playing the offensive line at the time.
Yeah, if you're a 200-pound guy, it's like, wow, look at that guy. He's huge.
Mm-hmm. There's a monster out there.
Was a lot of
the Snacks Harrison of his day.
Was it just calorie deficiency? Why people weren't that big?
I don't know. I maybe it was just because maybe that is the survival of the fittest. Maybe we're actually, you know, Darwin with his smelly farts was right, and
it's survival of the fattest.
We're actually evolving into the perfect human who happens to weigh like 400 pounds.
I've been to Disney World. I can attest. I can co-sign on that theory. You know, there is a theory that we are made to absorb and hold in our calories, and like the thin people of the world who are calorie inefficient are the bad ones, and the people who are holding on, they'll do much better in the famine time.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just in a perpetual feast, so it doesn't matter. They have it's like a superpower they have that's never being used. It'd be like if no one ever cut Wolverine. He wouldn't even know he had a healing factor.
Yeah. You're right.
Vinny's giving me the look of, don't you dare bring this into comic books. Don't you dare.
Well, I can't keep up on the comic book thing.
Well, luckily for you, comic books hadn't been invented in 1917.
Yeah.
So
I guess I'll say thank God, not because I hate comic books. It's just that if given your choice, it would be about comic books every single week.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. If we could do a whole episode on Moon Knight, I would be boring you with Moon Knight. And if we could move on to Paladin after that, you don't even know who Paladin is. I could inform you all about Paladin. Okay, another event in January 1st. Thomas Edward Lawrence, T.E. Lawrence, Lawrence of Arabia. He joins Faisal al-Hussein, as shown in the movie Lawrence of Arabia. So if you're watching Lawrence of Arabia, you are watching a 1917 feature.
Have you seen Lawrence of Arabia?
Yes, and I have a story about that. It's not a good story, but it is definitely a story.
Because that's one of those movies where, like, I'm a big enough movie fan that I would probably lie to most people and say I've seen it.
Oh, but you haven't seen it?
No.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Never seen it.
But you're being honest about that.
I'm being honest. I'm going to go, like, oh, I love movies. And someone would be like, well, yeah, well, if you love movies, do you know Lawrence of Arabia? And I have no choice. I'd have to say, of course.
Right.
Of course.
Well, I was in the same boat as you. I hadn't seen the movie, and I decided I was going to. So I rented it, and this was in the day when you rented it, you got it on two VHS tapes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the tapes were not labeled, so I did the 50-50. I took one of them, I put it in, and I see a man walking out of a desert. So I think, okay, this is Lawrence of Arabia. Here we go. We're beginning right in the middle. It turns out we were beginning right in the middle because I was watching the second tape. And I made it like 3/4 of the way through the tape before I was like, this is the end of the movie. What's on the other one? And then I put in the other one and I get the whole other story. So in my mind, Lawrence of Arabia is the story of a man who does a bunch of things. And then we have like a flashback to find out what his motivations are.
Like you watch it as though it were like Pulp Fiction.
Yes, yes, I re-chopped it and I watched it out of order. And it still held up. It was still a very good movie.
Is this one with, is Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. in this one?
No, Jose Ferrer is in it.
Oh. What's one, I don't know, what movie is Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. in?
He had a show.
I don't know.
He had a show in the 60s, right?
I know, I only know is my grandfather was very proud because one time he shot craps with him. That was my grandfather's claim to fame. If he'd find any way to bring up the time he shot craps with Ephraim Zimbalist Jr.
If you didn't know that craps was a dice game, what would you think he was talking about? So, I was thinking a little bit about Lawrence of Arabia. If you watch the movie, mm-hmm. keep in mind that T.E. Lawrence was a gay man.
Yeah.
And Peter O'Toole made the choice of actually playing him as a gay man.
Mm-hmm.
Which was amazing because he's in a giant, big-budget action-adventure movie. And the main character is very convincingly gay. This is also a movie that has the record for being the longest film with no speaking roles for women.
Now, how is it... Like, well, here's a question. How gay do they make him in a movie like this? Like, you say he's very convincingly gay. Is it just mm-hmm. that he's acting like effeminate? Or is he speaking with a lisp? Is he...
He's not,
is he mincing? Like,
he's what, not speaking is he... with a lisp. There's a happy quality, which I guess is where the word gay came from, because that's how...
It all came down from Peter O'Toole? That's where it came from?
That and Uncle Albert from Mary Poppins. You saw that character like, wow, that guy is super gay. Look how happy he is.
Oh, yes. I remember as a kid, before you even knew what gay was,
you knew Uncle Albert.
There's something up with Uncle Albert.
So if you want a very dumbed-down version of Lawrence of Arabia, we're in the middle of World War I, and the Ottomans are the bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if in the grand scheme of things, in the long view, if the Ottomans actually were the bad guys or not. But the Ottomans were fighting the UK, and we were allied with the UK. Therefore, the Ottomans were the bad guys. The Ottomans were controlling a lot of the Arab world, and the Arabs were fighting the Ottomans. So we went to try to help the Arabs. By we, I mean the English, because America was not in the war at this point. So that's the basic story. Arabs, good guys. Turks, bad guys.
All right. Oh, now I don't need to see it now.
No, you don't.
Now that if anybody again asks me, have you seen Lawrence of Arabia?
Now you can convincingly BS them.
Yes.
Yes. Oh, and Alec Guinness is in it.
Mm-hmm.
And he is wearing brown face. He is playing an Arab man.
Really?
Yes.
How like, is it like full body brown or just like you know, like the old like McMinstrel act kind of thing where it just covers the front of his face?
It's just the front of his face, but he's wearing robes, so the only thing you see is the front of his face. And this was his thing. Up until he became Obi-Wan Kenobi, he was known as the guy you would hire if you wanted an Arab or an Indian guy. And, you know, you didn't actually want to hire an Arab or an Indian guy because, you know, God forbid.
So he was the closest thing they had at yes. the time.
Yes. Thank God they never made Uncle Tom's Cabin in England. He's like, you know who would be great as Uncle Tom? Alec Guinness. And I think he would have done it. And I think he would have played it completely straight with great dignity and gravitas.
Did he ever play an Asian as well? Like the old like Charlie Chan movies where they...
I think he did. I think in Murder by Death, he played Charlie Chan.
Mm-hmm.
So we are moving on to Nickelodeon. I don't know if I even told you about this segment.
No. I'm
Nickelodeon is...
I know the Nickelodeon song. Put another nickel in what? The Nickelodeon.
That's not the Nickelodeon song.
Yes, it is.
No.
All I want is music, music, music.
Let me tell you the Nickelodeon song. Nick, 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 Nickelodeon. That's the Nickelodeon song.
Yes. Yes, for you youngins. For my day.
You were younger than me. Nickelodeon, for those who know the TV show but don't know where the word came from, comes from nickel and odeon. Odeon was an old word for cinema. Nickel is, of course, 5 cents. So this was a movie theater that charged 5 cents for admission. So every week in the Nickelodeon segment, we are going to recommend a movie for you, either from 1917 or made more recently, but set in 1917.
So wait, Nickelodeons, they weren't the thing where, like, you put your eyes in, you crank the side?
Maybe. Maybe some of them did.
Yeah, it was like, the arcade. And, like, you looked in the little... You know, and there'd be like, you know, like a chubby woman doing calisthenics,
right? Or a man sneezing, or an elephant being electrocuted. Yeah, all of the fun things to do in the day. I've seen an elephant die, and I saw a man sneeze.
That was the lineup.
Yeah, I got my nickel worth.
The first Academy Awards, like chubby woman calisthenics,
and train coming at camera. So. Because we were talking about T. Lawrence so much, I thought that it only fitting that Lawrence of Arabia is our
movie of the
is
week.
Our movie
our Nickelodeon.
Movie. Yes. So here are some 5 facts about Nickelodeon, and you know why I picked 5?
Why?
You didn't even want to justify it. It's Nickelodeon.
Yeah, I got it.
Yeah. Okay. Lawrence of Arabia is from 1961, directed by David Lean, one of the great epics of the time. It was a roadshow reserve seat movie. It was made on a super, super wide screen because this was when television was getting big, so they wanted to make something that you couldn't just watch on a little black and white TV. So they made it 3.5 hours long, they made it in big, beautiful color, and they made it an enormous aspect ratio. So even now, if you watch it, it's going to be letterboxed all hell. Mm-hmm.
Beautiful color bringing Alec Guinness's face to life.
Yes.
Is what you're saying.
They filmed a lot of this in Jordan. The first fact for you is when they were filming, there's a famous scene where they blow up a train line and there's a train derailment. They found the railroad tracks from the actual train explosion. And they were in perfect condition because it was out in the desert and there's no water. That's great. I love that. That's what I'm going to bring up every time I talk about Lawrence of Arabia.
That'll be your fun fact that, like, you show off with.
Yes, but I have 4 more facts that I could show off. Oh, shoot.
3 more.
3 more. Because one of them I already said, my fascinating story of watching it backwards.
Mm-hmm.
People who turned down the role of T.E. Lawrence, Marlon Brando turned it down, and then Albert Finney turned it down.
Really?
Now, young Marlon Brando was, like, you know, young and handsome and dashing. Yes. You don't think of Albert Finney as young or dashing.
No, I really kind of only know him as like a man who like started at 60. He was 60 years old.
Yes. And he played Daddy Warbucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm guessing he, you know, like for people our age, that's what we know him as. He was Daddy Warbucks.
Right.
And then later on, he was Big Fish.
Yes. Or has he ever played Churchill? I feel like he must have.
Mm-hmm.
If you're that big and British, you have to play Churchill. It's like a rule. So Marlon Brando and Albert Finney both said no before Peter O'Toole said yes. Okay, our final fact. When they were filming in Jordan, they needed to bring the water for the cast and crew 150 miles.
Wow. Why film there?
I don't know.
You know, I know that there had to be places a little more developed.
Yes.
Than wherever the hell they were filming.
And there's some shots that are just a full-on empty quarter. There's just sand for miles and miles around.
I just always assumed it was whatever they use for Tatooine.
Oh, that's Tunisia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go to Tunisia.
But the thing is, Tunisia is like 2,000 miles away from Jordan, and it looks geographically different. And they were trying to make a historically accurate movie, so they couldn't film there.
Mm-hmm.
The same way that if you wanted to make a Western, you probably couldn't film it around here.
No, they, you know, when they filmed it in Jordan, and so this was just like completely like wasteland area that they were filming in. Then if there's no water,
right, but I don't know why they needed to go so far inland. Maybe there's just like falafel shops like up to 19 miles away, but they just need to.
I'm picturing they bring the water in and everyone's thirsty. They can't wait, but then like Alec Guinness needs it to wash his paint off. And he just dumps all that water all over his face.
Hot mate.
Completely wasted.
We are now on to the births segment. This is something that I'm a little iffy about, just based on the idea that if you were born in 1917, that the year of your birth isn't super important.
Mm-hmm.
The birth we're going to talk about this week, she was born January 5th. Thank you. Born on January 5th in 1917 is Jane Wyman, one of the great actresses of the first half of the 20th century.
You're right. This is not important.
But Jane Wyndham being born in 1917 is no different than if she was born in 1918.
She's probably
but...
not as famous as an actress as she is for the connection with Reagan.
Well, nowadays, that's what she's known for, that she's Ronald Reagan's ex-wife. But she was the Liz Taylor of her day. She was married...
Liz Taylor wasn't born in 1917?
I think she's younger, yeah.
All right, because I figured Liz Taylor was the Liz Taylor of this time.
Well, I meant Liz Taylor in that she was married 5 different times.
Okay.
She had a huge and varied career in the movies. And I was looking up all the films she was in. She's in a... If you name, like, a A-list director from the first half of the 20th century, she's in one of his films. Not one you've heard of or seen.
One of the ones that ruined his career.
I'm a really big Hitchcock buff, but I've never heard of the film Stage Fright. And she was the star of Stage Fright. I really love Michael Curlitz, but I've never heard of The Story of Will Rogers. She was in Story of Will Rogers. I love Frank Capra, but I've never heard of Here Comes the Groom. She was in Here Comes the Groom. So she worked with all these great directors, but she never made any great movies with them. She was the first star of the first filming of Glass Menagerie.
Okay.
She was in Pollyanna. She played probably Pollyanna's mom or something like that. She was born Sarah Jane Mayfield, then became Sarah Jane Fuchs, and also changed her name to Jane Durrell when she briefly tried to become a singer before settling on Jane Wyman when she married her first husband.
I feel like back then you had to change your name. It was like you weren't allowed to use your real name, no matter what it was.
Do you know the Mickey Rooney story?
No.
Mickey Rooney's real name is Joe Yule, and... He got cast in a series, like a bunch of shorts, called Mickey Maguire. So they decided, well, why don't you just change your name, four-year-old boy? And he's like, yeah, okay. Think about how much that would screw you up. You're 4 years old, and someone tells you your name's not Joe anymore, it's Mickey.
And I mentioned back then, like, you were, like, literally purchased by the studio. Like, he was actually, like property of Paramount.
Right.
At the time. They could name him whatever they want. They could do whatever they want to him.
Yeah. So, Jane Wyman was an Oscar nominee and an Oscar winner. She was nominated for The Yearling. She won for a movie called Johnny Belinda, where she played a deaf-mute rape victim.
I heard deaf-mute, my mouth opened, and then you said rape victim, my mouth closed.
She's probably best known by our parents' generation for being on Falcon Crest for 9 seasons.
That I know. Because my mom used to watch Falcon Crest, and she'd point out to me in the credits every week that was Ronald Reagan's first wife.
And I think if you mention not the word patriarch, but matriarch, people are going to think of Jane Wyman in Falcon Crest.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a show a little bit before our age, so we didn't watch it.
Did you watch it? No, my mom watched it. I confuse it with, like, Dynasty, though.
Yes, I think Falcon Crest was a spinoff of
was
Dynasty.
Was it? Okay, it was, like, the same kind of thing. That and Dallas, they're all...
Right,
like...
big, rich families.
Yeah.
Yes. Her character's name in Falcon Crest, with all of the marriages of the years, Angela Channing Erickson Stavros Agretti.
Ooh, a little Greek in there, huh?
Yep. She died, not the character, but the actress, Jane Wyman, died in 2007 at age 90. Good long life.
Mm-hmm.
And now, for you, I have a quiz. Jane Wyman had 5 ex-husbands. I'm going to quiz you on all 5 of them.
Okay.
Okay. Husband number 1.
Reagan.
Husband number 1. Nope, this isn't the quiz.
Okay.
This is setting up for the quiz. Husband number 1 was Ernest Wyman. Husband number 2 was Myron Futterman. With a name like Myron Futterman, how could you go wrong?
Now that's a guy who, if your name is Myron Futterman, I feel like you're constantly straightening your bow tie.
But he was in the 1930s and 40s.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that was like the cool guy name. Maybe that name was like Vin Diesel, like, no one could have such a cool name as Myron Futterman.
It's gotta be made up,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. His real name's probably Lefty or something dumb like that. Husband number 3, Ronald Reagan. Husband number 4, Maxwell Carger. Husband number 5, also Maxwell Carger.
All right.
She married him, divorced him, married him again, then divorced him again.
Is there like a way to remember them, like a Henry VIII kind of thing, to remember these guys?
You can just say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Keep in mind, 3 is Ronald Reagan.
Okay.
Okay.
And one of them you only have to remember once, even though he takes up 2.
Yes, husbands 4 and 5 are the same man.
Okay.
Okay.
And Myron Futterman, I'm never going to forget. That's actually, I'll wear my Martin Furman Never Forget shirt.
Which one of Jane Wyman's ex-husbands was a New Orleans dress manufacturer?
Let's see. I know it's not Reagan.
Nope.
I'm going to go with Futterman, actually. I could picture a dress with a fancy label with, like, beautiful cursive writing on the label. Futterman's New Orleans.
You are correct. Myron Futterman, New Orleans dress manufacturer. Which one was the governor of California?
Well, Reagan.
Reagan.
Yes.
Okay, some of these are going to be easier.
Was it weird that he was, like, because you and I were toddlers when Reagan was.
Right.
Like, I'm wondering if people, like, brought that up. Like, we don't know if we could trust this guy. He's been divorced.
It was a big deal. He was the first president who was going to office divorced. He was the first one who had a living ex-wife. I found both those trivia pieces, and I don't know how you could not be divorced but still have a living ex-wife. Maybe they're talking about excommunication, but there wasn't anyone who was excommunicated. I don't know. But yeah, it was a big deal. It was.
And look how far we've come.
It was like the children of the 60s.
Yeah.
Okay. When Jane Wyman was 16, she lied that she was 19 on her wedding papers to husband number... Which...
Well, it'd be one, right?
One, correct.
Bill Wyman.
Ernest Wyman.
Bill Wyman.
Didn't marry Bill Wyman.
No.
He tried. Okay, which husband of Jane Wyman co-starred with her in Brother Rat and the follow-up, Brother Rat and a Baby?
What's these? Either the fourth or the fifth one, I'm guessing.
No, this is actually Reagan again.
Oh, all right. I thought we were eliminating. I figured this last guy was...
No.
Reagan was in Brother Rat.
Yes. I don't know what Brother Rat is.
Well, he was in the movies with the monkey, so I figured he was also in the one with a rat, maybe.
Yes. I only know three Reagan movies. I know...
Newt Rockne.
Newt Rockne, All-American. I know Bedtime for Bonzo, because that was the big joke in the 80s, is he was in a chimp movie. And I know Cattle Queen of Montana. And the reason why I know that is because Back to the Future is my favorite movie. And when Marty goes back in time to 1955, they're playing Cattle Queen of Montana just so that they can say starring Barbara Stanwyck and Ronald Reagan on the marquee.
Okay.
Because they just needed a Reagan movie from 1955.
I think the movie with the Bonzo, I think there was like a series.
Oh, maybe it was.
Yeah, there were several Bonzo movies. Yeah, like the Beethoven movies.
Yeah. You know, I bet when he was making them, he was like, this is it. This is the low point of my career. Nothing good is happening to me again after I'm playing second fiddle to a chimp.
But he's kind of the perfect president for the 80s in that way, because I feel like when you and I were kids, like, half the comedies involved apes.
Yes.
Like, a good, like... There was a stretch there where 50% of the movies made had an ape in them.
Yes. Even something like Back to School, which you think, of course there's not chimpanzees in it. There's a chimpanzee scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's, you know, very liberal use of apes.
Who did she marry and divorce twice? This is kind of a gimme because I explained it to you.
The last guy, whatever his name was again.
Yes. You just don't remember because it's not Myron Futterman.
No.
No. Maxwell Carker. Okay. Which ex-husband of Jane Wyman became a two-term president in the 1980s?
Let's see, not Futterman.
No.
I don't think.
No.
It's got to be Ronald Reagan.
Yes, Ronald Reagan. Okay. Which one of her five divorces was due to politics? The particular politics, she was a Democrat, he was a Republican.
Now, let's see. This might be a little bit of a trivia kind of thing, because I know Reagan was a Democrat at one time and switched parties.
I am nodding, but I am not committing any further because I don't
want to. So I think this might be, I think you'd want me to say Reagan, but I think this might be a trick. And it's got to be a four guy.
No, this was Ronald Reagan.
All right, so I thought that was one of the ones where you gave me the easy answer, and that was the trick.
Oh, yeah, I trick you by not tricking you.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, which ex-husband had jelly beans in the Oval Office? Think really hard about this.
Why is it that if you look at the time when Reagan was president, like, there's a lot of like awful stuff going on, but everyone's like, oh, that guy with the jelly beans, like that was political satire of 1985. Like, we're gonna ignore everything else going on here, but we're going to really focus on this man's love of jelly beans.
I don't think he even liked jelly beans. I think someone asked him, what candy do you like? And he's like, I don't know. What did the last guy say? Like, last guy said M&M's. Like, say jelly beans.
And then, like, I'm pretty sure, like, he had to get, like, people, like, giving him jelly bean gifts all the time and just, like, throw on a big pile.
I'm imagining if he wrote his memoir, like, the book publisher would be like, you know, a third of this book, jelly bean stuff. I just want all the details about your history with jelly beans. The nights with jelly beans, the days, the vacations. You and jelly beans have some sordid stories together, I know.
Well, see, I'm trying to think, like, do we have any food that is identified with any other president? Like, all right, well, Clinton was always fast food.
Yeah.
Like, he was always, like, you know, eating McDonald's and pork rinds or something.
Mm-hmm.
How about the Bushes?
No.
Well, didn't Bush Sr. have something with broccoli?
Yes, well, he said he didn't like it. And then he was supposed to make it a public apology because the broccoli industry was on him. But then he's stuck to his guns and said, I still don't like broccoli, and I'm the president of the United States, and I'm not going to fall on my sword for the broccoli industry. But I don't know if Bush Jr. had any sort of food things.
No.
I don't remember anything about Obama having food choices.
I thought they, like, make fun of him. He's like a snob eating, like quinoa or something.
Yeah, but I don't know if he ever ate quinoa. It's not like he put out a press release saying
no, but I feel like I've seen him get, like mocked for, like liberal food. Like, oh, that guy with his kale or something like that.
Yeah, but he took a lot of mocking from the right over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And I think most of it was, if not undeserved, then it would have happened regardless of what he did.
Mm-hmm.
If he picked blue as his favorite color, they'd be mocking.
I'm not going to go down this path, but, like, when you think about, like, you know, what food you could have mocked, they could have mocked him for.
Yes.
They went easy, I guess, in that way. Like,
yes.
It's almost like trailblazing that they mocked him for, you know, like kale as opposed to other food.
Yeah, they mocked him for the content of his character.
Yes.
The dream is alive. Okay, we have two more questions and we're done with the Jane Wyman quiz. And we've gotten off track. So, put on your Jane Wyman thinking cap. Which ex-husband of Jane Wyman's name sounds like a Buck Rogers space weapon? Choices are Ernest Wyman, Myron Futterman, Ronald Reagan, Maxwell Carger, or Maxwell Carger.
You know, here's the thing. It's Reagan, but a Futterman would be a great weapon.
Yeah. Oh, I got hit with a Myron Futterman. Okay, quiz is done. With a better transition than that.
I am done now. We've trained this robot to host the podcast. Ending quiz now.
It's a Jeff bot again. So, if you have something to say to us about this podcast, about the numerous bits of dead air, about what we've forgotten about Jane Wyman, about our thoughts about Ronald Reagan, about sarsaparilla, if Wilkinson's is not the best, please let us know if you have a superior sarsaparilla. You can email us at 1917podcast@gmail.com. We'll have a website up soon. In fact, you probably won't be able to hear this without us having the website up, but as of now, as of January 4th, no website.
Mm-hmm.
So we are going to say goodbye to you. Ahoy, hoy.
Ahoy, hoy.
See you in 100 years next week.